Chapter 1. A Look Below the Surface. As an artist, I am constantly working with new materials as I strive to create a rich, tangible vocabulary of techniques to influence the meaning behind each of my projects. Materiality is essential to every artist before they can start creating, as the choice they make at this initial stage directs where their art will go. As certain materials hold more historical significance than others. When considering materials for my independent study, I did not struggle as I knew exactly which material would emphasize my main point. Even though I had never used the material before, I understood the historical context that went along with it. As I grew up surrounded with the porcelain pieces my parents had either brought back from China themselves or collected from different stores or inherited from different relatives. So when my professor asked what material I wanted to use, so she could order a shipment, I did not hesitate to say I'd be working with porcelain. I had explained to her that this would be my first time working with a material, so she tried to explain to me what it felt like to work with. Every clay body has a slightly different recipe of different materials, which means that each reacts in a different way when being molded. My professor told me that the first time I used the material, it would feel like my melted ice cream. Of course, I did not believe her, because when porcelain is fired, it feels so sturdy, especially when I think of all the porcelain jars I had seen in museums from hundreds of years ago. It was hard to believe that I would start in such a soft and malleable state. Sitting down on my wheel, I went through the normal preparation processes. Wedging the clay to slowly work out the air pockets, preparing small balls of clay to throw, bringing over a bowl of hot water, and finally laying out my tools. This process had become very familiar to me over the past few years, as I had done it so many times. However, as I went to center the piece of clay, I was surprised to feel how easy it was to move in my hands. No struggle, no digging my elbow deeper into my upper thigh. It was just a simple push and pull as I coned the material upwards. Pushing it back downwards, I created a hole in the center and slowly started to form the walls of the piece. That day, I was just working on making simple cup forms as I was trying to familiarize myself with the material before moving on to more complex pieces for my independent study, a capstone project for my college degree. However, I knew it was more than just that. When I was young, I was adopted from China and left the country that was supposed to be my homeland for somewhere completely foreign. During my early childhood, I did not reflect on this much. However, as I have grown up, I realized how complex this has made my relationship with my own identity, as my appearance reflects one history, while my personal experience reflects another. This relationship has been one that I have had to explore my entire life, as I have navigated what it means to be an Asian American woman in America without Asian parents. No matter how much they try to teach me, my American parents fundamentally lack the cultural upbringing that I am desperately trying to learn about. Even as a studio arts and English double major, I have worked to educate myself about Chinese history through taking a few history classes. However, what has truly helped me to grow is to learn more about Asian culture as a whole. One of my ceramics professors often talked to me about the importance of ceramic shapes when throwing on the wheel. He emphasized that when creating these shapes, you had to think about other shapes that you had seen in your everyday life, and mentioned that my forms were good, yet lacked some vibrancy. Another one of my classmates was from Vietnam, and my professor would always talk about the complexity of some of her forms. He spoke about a cultural difference in what types of shapes she was exposed to living and growing up in an Asian country. Her goal was never to compare my Chinese heritage with her Vietnamese one, but instead to highlight the difference between the United States and Asian countries. Last year, I had the opportunity to work with different bodies of clay and explore how each of them had a unique feel. However, as I thought more about my project and what I specifically wanted to try to get out of it, I realized how important these differences in material truly are. The history of the clay can be seen through the flexibility of different materials within the body of the clay, which speaks to the importance of choosing material before construction. As I went into my independent study, I thought about this material history and decided to use porcelain because of its history in Chinese culture. As I looked towards next year, I realized that to continue this journey into self-discovery in both my personal and professional life, I will need to expand on what I already know. I know how to create work of art from clay and know how to create meaning from it. However, I do not truly understand what I am creating. Similar to starting with a lump of clay at the beginning of a throwing process. The ball of clay can become so many different shapes. It could be a cylinder, a bowl, or a plate. And those shapes are just the beginning of what could be created. It is only through carefully moving and molding that these final shapes can be fully realized. Even once that occurs, it still takes time to get to the final product. Once made, it still goes through decorations, firing, glazing, and yet another firing before the final product can be realized. All these steps lead to opportunities that may drastically shift the piece. However, the basic shape of the piece will always be present as it was the start of the entire process. After these pieces have gone through the entire kiln process, they are now objects that cannot be changed unless broken. This permanence is often intimidating, as before the piece is fired, it is easy to smooth out or change the imperfections without having to make that many changes. However, it is important to understand that once it is fired, that is no longer possible. Though this may seem daunting, it also allows an artist to leave her mark, as through firing it, all the alterations an artist makes will never be erased. For this reason, many artists decide to create a maker's mark to leave a reminder to the viewer who made that specific piece of art. This was something that was important for my own work, as I wanted to have a symbol that related to my Chinese heritage. Deciding on a symbol that represents such a large part of my identity was a hard decision, as I wanted something that spoke specifically to my own identity, but not Chinese culture as a whole. So it was a very difficult balance to reach. However, after thinking about the Chinese name I was given at birth, and my parents' decision to incorporate part of my Chinese name after I was adopted, I knew that I wanted my maker's mark to be that. I wanted it to be my middle name. Making this decision made me think more about my complex relationship with my middle name. Though it was taken directly from my Chinese birth certificate, I still struggled to claim it as such, as Western society continually tries to conform its spelling and pronunciation to their own agenda. Even in kindergarten, I was confronted with this struggle. What is your middle name? My kindergarten teacher asked me, looking down at my best attempt at writing. I was at the point of my life when having the letters go the correct way was a huge triumph. However, she wasn't focused on that so much as on the unconventional spelling. You could tell that she was skeptical of the word as she pointed to it. Even though it looked like the month of June, something was wrong. Instead of having an E at the end, it just abruptly ends with the letter N, leaving most readers confused. I've had a few graduations since then, so I know the name always gives some pause. And when my kindergarten teacher heard how I pronounced the name, her suspicion was confirmed. In her most patient voice, she recommended that I add an E, and after watching me write a lopsided E, she left me to my work. Sadly, this is not an unusual correction for me to make, as spelling and letters in general had never come easily to me. Plus, being a kindergartner, I knew her opinion was superior. However, this correction did not seem right to me. So, after she left, I looked stubbornly down at the paper. My mom had shown me how to write my name on multiple occasions, so I knew that I was not wrong. Yes, Forgetting my home address had probably put my intelligence slightly in question for my teacher. However, that could hardly be blamed on me. We had recently moved and were temporarily living in a rental place. Of course, that would confuse a kindergarten brain. Taking a black marker in my little hand, I hovered above the word before I ran it across the paper multiple times until I was finally satisfied that I was completely blacked out. Once I was done, I moved my marker up and printed in my best handwriting, J-U-N. The dark black block below the name definitely looked strange, especially because of the drawing of a dog above it. However, even at that age, I knew that my name was important because it spoke to a piece of my identity that I never wanted to lose. When asking my mom later about this story, she does remember me being very annoyed when people tried to spell my name wrong. However, after collecting 15 years of schoolwork, she has no clue where that exact drawing is. The flow of the letters had come so easily off my lips when the teacher had asked, yet I knew they were wrong when she suggested I add an E to my middle name. My family had westernized the pronunciation of the name because the original spelling, but pronouncing it similar to the way you pronounce the month June. My upbringing formed the sounds rather than the Chinese roots, making the worm sound foreign to its origins. I feel like my whole family probably knows that we are butchering the pronunciation, yet we also know that we are trying our best with the sounds our vocal cords can easily make. After talking with my mom about this decision, I found it interesting that she chose to go with a more Western pronunciation, especially compared to my sister's middle name. Her middle name is one that cannot hide the Chinese cultural undertones. Helen Ruyi Langer was adopted 3 years after I was, and my parents hesitated slightly when deciding if they were to keep her middle name. Unlike my middle name, my sister's is one that is distinctly Chinese. This is not a bad thing, however, it does make people pause a second longer when pronouncing her name. It is not one of those middle names that you could easily guess. Yet I am glad that my parents decided to keep a part of our Chinese name. Having these middle names remind us both where we come from, even though it may take us a lifetime to find a way back to China. And even if we do end up back in the country, I question what we will actually find. It is when I speak to people who know Chinese that I can understand how much I am divorced from my name's origin. It is beyond just fighting others' impulses to add an E, as in kindergarten. Instead, it is a fundamental cultural understanding that I have lost because my parents lack it themselves. Being a translation adopted child from China leaves me searching for answers at the most random moments in my life. When I do the pundit square charts in high school biology, looking at the medical history form, looking into the faces of my grandparents and wondering what I will look like at their age, and not being able to get any ideas from their faces staring back at me. They were raised by European parents from Germany, England, France, Canada, and many other primarily white countries. I've always known the meaning of June was good looking in Chinese. I knew this from talking with my parents for the naming worksheets I had in middle school. Yet talking with someone who grew up hearing the name in their elementary school classes could give a completely different understanding of the word itself. Throughout high school, I was always thinking about this, especially because I was very active in the Asian American Student Association. Even though through most of high school, I try not to associate myself too closely with Chinese students from China. It was nothing against them. However, at that point in my life, I felt intimidated by the idea of confronting how much I still had to learn about myself. However, after entering college, this started to change. My freshman year of college, I decided to try something new, something exciting, something that would fulfill an earth and/or natural science requirement. About 2 days into this class, I knew that I was going to need a lot of help and was soon best friends with the TA. However, on one particular night, something must have gone wrong. The moon had risen too quickly, or something else was wrong with the environment, because we had completely strayed from talking about computer science. He was instead writing Chinese characters on the board. The handwriting was messy, and I could have definitely scolded him for it if it wasn't so foreign to me. One of my friends was taking Chinese, so I had seen how one learns to draw the characters in Chinese. However, seeing the confidence he possessed as he pressed the expo marker to the whiteboard was something else entirely. It was amazing to hear him explain the meaning of the word. Even though it was the same, it still felt more real to me. It felt like the name was going back to its cultural roots. When my TA spoke the name, this feeling amplified, as it forced me to realize that I did not know my name, and that reclaiming it to its cultural roots would take time. I went to a boarding school with many students from China in high school, so I had heard the correct pronunciation before. However, this time felt different. Maybe it was because I was in college. Maybe it was just the strange environment. But somehow it made me want to reclaim my name. To me, reclaiming my name is not some broad gesture that I can do every day. I still make mistakes and take the easy way out when saying my name. However, the proper pronunciation is something that I want to move towards. Maybe even if it's just for my graduation from the College of Worcester, I want to pronounce my name as it should be. When my parents adopted me, and on my first passport, my name was Hong Dong Jun. And to me, having it printed on such an official document seals its significance. For the first year of my life, the nannies and foster parents only had this name to call me by when caring for me. Even though they all knew that they could not keep me, I know that they must have softly whispered the name when I was close to sleep, as I know my mom always would when trying to feign to get me in bed before dark. This must have formed a relationship with me and learned how I was different from the other babies around me. Maybe they even had special games that only I knew how to play. For that whole year of my life, I was creating an identity that would soon change after my parents adopted me. Fundamentally, it would be the same. It would still be happy. I would still not like to sleep, however my name would change. No one would rock me to bed whispering Hong Dong Jun anymore. Instead, they'd be saying the name Hannah June Langer. My parents would erase the first, could not erase the first year of life. Yet, through giving me a new Germanic name, it started my transition towards Western culture. To having a name that matches my parents is one that was required to bind us together. Even though we do not share blood, by sharing a last name links our family together and helps to provide proof to the world that even though we do not look alike, we are family. However, my past name cannot be forgotten as beyond keeping my middle name. In 2014, my humanities teachers, high school administrators, and mom were all waiting with bated breath for one document to be faxed over from the visa department that stated that I would have permission to spend 2 weeks studying and traveling around China with my Humanities 2 class. We had long since completed all the paperwork. However, one small detail was holding us back. The paperwork had asked if I had ever had another name or something of that nature. So, of course, I stated that I did, as at one point in my life, my legal name had been Hong Dong Jun. Because of this, my visa was being held up. The night before we were to leave for the trip, my mom would tell me later the school received the final approval and my new passport and visa were returned, giving me permission to travel in China. At that moment, it was ironic that I got held up by a name that I would never be called, yet it was one that others had once called me, and at one point, all of my legal and medical documents had had the name on it. The first photo my parents had ever seen of me had that name attached to them. Having a name is what we use to make agreements with each other, is what we call someone when trying to get their attention, is what we stack our reputation on. We need a name to do anything in this life. I got two. When the Chinese one no longer fit me, as I was transitioning towards a more Western civilization, my parents gave me a new one that sounded more American. Yet my parents decided to leave me with a part of my old name, in hopes it would remind me of where I came from. As I've gotten older, I wonder if it could also be used to help me find my way back to the heritage I missed as a child.